the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. The cover story in Christianity Today in recent weeks has been this: Fanatics, How Christians Have Succumbed to the Culture of Sports. The article is by Sherl James Hoffman, who is himself a kinesiologist, professor of kinesiology, which is to say he knows what he's talking about when he talks about sports. But he's making a pretty controversial argument here, and the argument is that evangelical Christians have succumbed to what Frank DeFord of Sports Illustrated is called sportianity, a syncretism of sports and Christianity. He suggests it's at the expense of the gospel and Christian witness, and he has created a controversy. And it is very interesting. We're going to have a very special guest coming on. I sent a message out earlier saying that today this radio program was going to be about sports, and I had advertised a fountain of sports wisdom is about to break forth. My next words were crucial. Obviously, I have a guest. This is outside the area of my expertise in terms of giving the kind of commentary that needs to be present on this. I want to guide the conversation with guest Ted Kluck. And Ted Kluck, who is a pastor and who also has experience in terms of sports, is going to come back to talk to us about this. We're going to look forward to that conversation with Ted Kluck in just a few moments. Meanwhile, you may want to look at Christianity Today. Go to the website. You can see the cover story, the news article. We'll be talking about it momentarily. First, to review some other issues in the news. Headline, Wall Street Journal, Trembler Tilts Axis of Earth. This surprised me. Gautam Naik, writing in the Wall Street Journal, says that the earthquake that struck Chile was so powerful it shifted the planet's axis enough to make it spin slightly faster, meaning our days will be shorter by 1.26 millionths of a second. Now, you probably didn't notice that. But there's a lot going on here, just in terms of what this tells us. God made a universe that is so finely tuned that there is a term that refers to why this universe and this universe alone allows for human beings to live. It's called the cosmic anthropic principle. Now, those of you who are taking notes, especially those of you driving right now, I'll just tell you that all you need to remember is that it's cosmic, referring to the cosmos, anthropic, referring to human beings, and the principle, which means one of the ways we interpret this universe is to know that it and it alone allows for human life. Any other conceivable universe would not, as you would, for instance, change gravity slightly. We wouldn't be able to live. You change the climate just slightly. You change the mix in the atmosphere just slightly. And this is one of the reasons why naturalistic, secular scientists have a hard time explaining the world as it is, other than it's a great, big, wonderful accident. The Christian worldview comes at it, of course, from a different perspective, saying we know the God who created this. He recreated all that is for the theater of his own glory. He tells us why he created it. He tells us who created it. And indeed, you take the testimony, for instance, of Job. You look at the final chapters of the book of Job, and what do you find? You find Job referring to what we might call a cosmic anthropic principle, which is to say, you made the world. You knew exactly what we needed. You created all the creatures, including human beings. And you had a purpose. And you know the earth itself is a fine-tuned instrument. This planet is finely tuned. Its gravity is just right for human life. Its atmosphere is just right for human life. And now we have this news that the earthquake that struck Chile was so powerful that it shifted the planet's axis just slightly. How slightly? Well, it means that we're going to be spinning slightly faster for at least some time until it resets itself. Our days shorter by 1.26 millionths of a second. David Carriage, a British Geological Survey scientist, he's head of natural hazards. That must be quite a job. He says this is an esoteric effect that physics says has to happen. In other words, God's created a universe in which you have force and counterforce. You have action and you have reaction. And the reaction to this earthquake is the spinning up of the earth on its axis. I don't know about you, but I find that amazing. And I find it also rather threatening. In the sense that you take the earthquake itself, we take for granted the fact that the earth is firm under our feet. Well, it's not so firm as it feels. First of all, we know we are in motion as the Earth is spinning on its axis. We do not have the sensation of that. Nonetheless, it is happening. But the Earth shifting under our feet is something that does threaten us. When we consider the power of an earthquake, and we see here a very fulfillment of Romans chapter 8, where the creation is groaning for the fulfillment, the new heaven and new earth that is to come. You know, when the Earth shifts under our feet, it's a reminder that what we think is solid, what we think is stable, what we think is so firm is not so firm as it feels. Very, very interesting. By the way, we've been talking about earthquakes, of course, the massive tremor that took place in Haiti to massive loss of life, in Chile to also significant loss of life. There were also two other major earthquakes just since, say, December. And that's just a reminder to us that not only there, but even where we are, the Earth may not be quite so sound under our feet as it seems. Charmaine Yost has written a fascinating column for the Wall Street Journal. It's on abortion in the health bill. And her point is simply this. The White House knows what's going on with this bill. It could be very easily fixed, except for the fact that the president's decided to go forward with this health care bill and what he calls an up or down vote, which means reconciliation, which means forcing one of the rules of the Senate to overcome a filibuster, which means that nothing can be in the bill that is not directly related to budgetary matters. Thus, it's going to be very, very difficult to imagine how anyone who's genuinely pro-life can be satisfied with this bill coming out. We're going to have to be watching this very closely, but I'll tell you right now, it looks very troubling to me because it looks like at least some may be setting up a situation in which they're going to try to find some way to justify voting for a bill that will indeed not have the kind of pro-life protections that are absolutely necessary. My eye is on one man in particular, that's Bert Stupak, the Michigan Democratic congressman who really pulled off a major political coup with the so-called Stupak Amendment that is on the form of health care as it was passed by the House. Very clear prohibitions against any federal involvement in abortion through the health care reform. But now Representative Stupak is, I think the only word is can say he's concerning us somewhat, as he is telling the press that prospects are good for resolving a dispute over abortion. Let me just read to you. This is an article by John Flesher. It says, Representative Bart Stupak said he expects to resume talks with House leaders this week in a quest for wording, listen to these words, they're very crucial, that would impose no new limits on abortion rights but would also not allow use of federal money for the procedure. You know, that's going to be very interesting. He went on and said, the president says he doesn't want to expand or restrict current law on abortion. Neither do I. That's never been our position. So is there some language that we can agree on that hits both points? We don't restrict, we don't expand. I think we can get there. Well, I don't see how. But it's going to be fascinating to see, and I hope this is not a situation in which we have pro-life members of Congress, both in the House and in the Senate, who are going to go wobbly on this crucial moral issue. A lot is out there just in terms of issues in the news that ought to have our attention. USA Today's out with an article. And this is in the category of news that isn't news. The headline is Top Homeschool Texts Dismiss Evolution for Creationism. Okay, here you have Dylan Levin writing an article for the Associated Press. Here's one paragraph. Christian-based materials dominate a growing homeschool education movement that encompasses more than 1.5 million students in the U.S. And for most homeschool parents, a Bible-based version of the Earth's creation is exactly what they want. Federal statistics from 2007 show 83% of homeschooling parents want to give their children religious or moral instruction. Ian Slatter of the Homeschool Legal Defense Association said the majority of homeschoolers self-identify as evangelical Christians. Most homeschoolers will definitely have a sort of creationist component to the homeschool program. Okay. Is that news? Well, it's not, of course. But what does it tell us? Well, it tells us something, first of all, that both the Associated Press and USA Today considered what's not news to be worthy of comment. They're doing so because this study indicates that homeschool texts and science largely dismiss evolution or are very critical of evolution and support what they define here as creationism. The point I want to make is this. It shows you what is different when parents are in control of education. Time and time again on this program, I come back to the fact that parents are the ones given by God the assignment to teach their children and to be responsible for the teaching of their children. It's parents, not schools, who are going to give an answer to God for the training of our children. And if you'll just notice, what you would very quickly draw as an implication of this article is this. Where parents have the most direct control of education, evolution is not a part of the picture. And that has to drive the educational establishment and the intellectual elites absolutely nuts. Which is why they would rather educate your children than you educate them. And just remember, there's an agenda there. We're going to come back to talk about sports, the cover story in Christianity Today for February. Fanatics, how Christians have succumbed to the culture of sports. I don't want to let that issue go away without some intelligent Christian conversation. And my guess is there are a lot of you out there ready to do it. Have we sold out? Have we been co-opted by a culture of sports? Is the world of sports at all redeemable for purposes of the gospel and Christian witness? Should we encourage young people to be involved in sports, and should we join the fans? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Glad to hear from you by email. Write me at mail@albertmuller.com. Facebook, The Albert Mueller Program. Twitter, /Albert Mueller and Mueller Radio. And we'll be right back with more on The Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Sheryl James Hoffman writing the cover story in a recent issue of Christianity Today, Whatever Happened to Play, is suggesting that evangelicalism, and evangelicals in particular, have been co-opted by the seduction of sports. From an historical perspective, he argues that evangelicals once considered sports to be secular and worldly and thus something to stay away from, but no longer. We are definitely big into sports now. You've got evangelical sports stars, evangelical sports ministries, and all kinds of evangelicals championing their teams and participation in sports across the board. He raises some theological issues having to do with everything from the over-worship of the human body to the destruction and disrespect for the human body. He goes on to suggest that the culture of modern sports, especially professional sports, but also other forms of voluntary sports, has just become so corrupt, whether it's baseball and the steroid scandals or various other things, that it's pretty much irredeemable. And, well, at least he raises the question of whether Christians are in sports to make a difference or to be changed by the experience of sports. He quotes Frank DeFord, columnist of Sports Illustrated, years ago talking about the amalgam or the syncretism of Christianity and sports as sportianity. I think we need to talk about this. And I'll tell you right up front that even though I have a good many ideas about sports, I'll just have to tell you right up front, I'm not a big sports fan. I need someone on this program today who really understands sports from the inside and is a believer. Ted Kluck is a journalist. He writes columns about sports. He's also a former professional indoor football player. He's the author of the Moody Press book, The Reason for Sports, A Christian Fanifesto. Ted Kluck, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Hey, it's great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Hey, Ted, I'm glad to have you. And by the way, I should mention that Christianity Today asked you to write something of a rejoinder to the cover story. And you make the point, actually, there are three rejoinders by three different authors. You make the point that there is something in sport that is important for evangelicals.
Oh, definitely. I think there are a lot of somethings in sports that are important for evangelicals. And but I'll add the caveat that, you know, sports is one of those things that, you know, you're, like you said in the intro, you either like it or you don't. You know, this is something that I was kind of born into. You know, I was born into an athletic family. My dad was a football player, and my grandfather before him, and it was something that I just grew up loving. You know, I never thought of it as, you know, quote unquote, a culture that I would engage. It was just something that I did and something that I really got a kick out of and enjoyed and still do to this day. So as I've grown up in that and as I've thought about it more, I've seen a lot of fruit in sports. You know, I've seen the Lord work in athletes' lives and fans' lives and the lives of coaches and guys that I've played with. And, you know, for some of those reasons, I think it's worth hanging on to.
The phone number to join the conversation is 877-893-8255. Toll free, that's 877-893-TALK. Write us at mail@albertmueller.com. Also message us at Facebook, The Albert Mueller Program, Twitter /Albert Mueller. Ted, I want to ask you a couple of big picture questions here, and I've read your stuff. I appreciate your thoughtfulness. So let me just ask you to put this into perspective. Put sport, just athletics, whether it be the Olympics or two kids playing ball, you know, out on the ball field. Put that in a theological perspective. What is it about sport that makes it so fascinating?
Well, it's competition, you know, and I think no matter who you are, whether you're, you know, the kid watching the two kids play ball in the backyard, or whether you're one of the millions of people around the world watching the Olympics on television, I mean, we're interested in that stuff. You know, it's compelling. It's interesting to see who wins and loses, and it's interesting to know the stories behind those people. You know, we love the movie Chariots of Fire because you've got the picture of two guys finding their identities in different things. You know, the Harold Abrahams character finds his identity in winning, and he even says, he's a sprinter. He says, I have 10 seconds to justify my existence. And on the other hand, you've got Eric Little finding his identity and his growth and his relationship with Christ, but they're both athletes, and they're both competing with each other. And it's interesting to watch those guys win and lose. So I think sports is just like any other aspect of our lives, whether it's, you know, the radio shows we listen to or the TV that we watch or the time that we spend on the Internet. You know, whatever we eat or drink, whatever we do, we have to do it to the glory of God. And I think, you know, as Christians, our responsibility is to hold up our participation in sports to that light and to see if what we're doing is truly to the glory of God.
All right, stick off of the criticism of radio now. That's out of bounds. So, yeah,
this is the only show I listen to, so yeah, we're okay there.
I used a sports metaphor, and I'm just incredibly proud of myself. Let me ask you another question here. When you think about the kinds of things that are covered in this cover story, I mean, there's some pretty disturbing stuff in here. You've got all the scandals with professional sports. You've got college athletes found cheating. You've got college presidents of supposedly Christian colleges found cheating on behalf of students. You've got some things that clearly no evangelical Christian would want to be involved in, but you're saying that the world of sport is not itself corrupt. We should be looking at a bigger picture.
Yeah, I mean, I think sports is a great way to have a look at the sin nature that's inside everybody, you know. And I think whether you're a business buff or a political buff, you could find those stories of corruption in any of those walks of life. You know, you can find them obviously in the business world, in the corporate world, in the academy. You know, these stories are out there. I think Hoffman kind of cherry picked a lot of the more obvious, you know, sensational kind of stories about corruption in sports. I mean, there are many to choose from, sadly. But like I said before, I think there's also a lot of good happening there. And you know, if we're going to be in the world, if we're going to be salt and light, I want Christians in those sports. You know, I want Christians in professional baseball. I want Christians in college sports. I want Christian coaches working their way up the ladder if that's something that they feel called to do so that they can have an impact on some of these things.
Well, and I have seen many of the effects you're talking about. And I've known many guys who have told me, young men in particular, or older men, speaking about when they were younger men, that their lives are basically influenced for Christ, for good, by a coach, by fellow players, by the discipline of sports. In an age in which we have a lot of fatherless boys and young men, sports becomes a crucible where many of them are finally in a structured, disciplined male environment for good. And there are opportunities for the gospel there as well. Ted, I want to ask you another hard question, and this is one that fascinates me, and it's one that stretches my analysis, okay? Are there sports that we ought not to be involved in? You look at all the things that are classified as sports. I'm thinking of some of these, you know, extreme fighting and martial sports. Sure. Are there some things that just don't possibly glorify God?
That's a great question, and it's one that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. And what I come up with is often uncomfortable to me, and that is I think if we're going to take a long, hard look at some of those sports, we have to take a look at the sports that we love. You know, I would be hard for us to find a lot of Christians that like cage fighting, but there are a lot of Christians that like football, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could argue that both of those sports are violent. I love football. I've played it my entire life, but the cage fighting thing kind of makes me queasy, you know. And I think there's sort of two different things at play. I mean, there are Christians in those sports who are sincere, who are growing in their walks with the Lord. You know, one of the most striking things about my first book, Facing Tyson, I interviewed 15 guys that fought Mike Tyson, the boxer. And I covered a lot of boxing for that book, and I was always sort of thrilled to be at ringside, but I was always a little bit disgusted by it, too. But even in that arena, you know, I met guys who were sincere in their faith and who were growing. And
Ted, hold that thought. Hold that thought. I want to come back with you in just a minute. We're going into a break here. Folks, to join the conversation, you can be called 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world. You're listening to the Albert Miller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The topic today is a cover story of a recent Christianity Today issue, Fanatics, How Christians Have Succumbed to the Culture of Sports. The article, well, it's created a good deal of attention and controversy. Cyril James Hoffman is arguing that there's just too much evangelical mixture of, let's just say, reasons, motivations, and perhaps goals in terms of our engagement with sports. And he's arguing that in the end, we probably lost more than we've gained. And he created quite a controversy. Three rejoinders that were published after his article, Mark Householder, who played football at the University of Cincinnati, came back and to say, you know, one of the things to remember here is that an awful lot of sports, indeed, by far the greatest number of people who are involved in sports are not in professional sports or college sports. They're in the backyard somewhere, and a lot of them working with kids for their good. Benjamin Chase wrote to say that the problem with just getting rid of sports is that it adopts a Gnostic view of the human body, you know, fails to see that God made us to do some of these things. Very interesting argument. But Ted Kluck wrote the last one, and I thought he made some excellent points. Ted Kluck's a journalist. He's author of the Moody Press book, The Reason for Sports, A Christian Manifesto. And we're very glad to have Ted Kluck on the program today. Ted, we're going to go to calls. Let me ask you a quick question. Let me test a theory with you. We were talking about certain sports, and I asked the question because it's one that I have to think about. Are there certain sports that Christians ought not perhaps to be involved in? And we talked about extreme sports and especially some of the martial sports. So let me just ask you, I'm going to test a theory. You see if this makes sense, and if not, poke some holes in it. Help me think. It seems to me that if there is something that's called a sport that is degrading to the human body, and essentially focuses on doing violence to another human body, we've got a problem.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, and I think boxing and mixed martial arts, some of these sports that are hugely popular now, would have to come under that microscope. You know, it's hard to believe that, you know, we could take our bodies that God gave us and put them in harm's way in that fashion. And, you know, as I talk with people about those sports, I think to myself, you know, I can watch them. You know, I've watched boxing, I've watched mixed martial arts live, but I would be heartbroken if one of my two sweet boys wanted to do that. You know, and I think, you know, that's a pretty good litmus test for me. You know, what I want my kids involved in this. Yeah. What I want them to make this their career or even their hobby. And, you know, the answer to that question for me is absolutely not.
You know, the Apostle Paul talks about concentrating and giving our priority and attention to whatsoever things are just, beautiful, pure, of good report. There's no shame in sport, which is to the glory of God, that understands that God did give us these bodies. We don't want to be Gnostics denying the body. God gave us bodies to do marvelous things with, and there's some athletes who could do some incredible things, and I think really show off the handiwork of God, and also the discipline of one who commits to that kind of training. But on the other hand, there are some things I think are just essentially degrading. And I love the way you put it, Ted, where you said, you know, the test for you is kind of what would you think of in terms of your own boys, in terms of their own involvement. That father heart is probably a pretty good guide of analysis here as it's guided by Scripture. Let's go to a call. Lori's calling from Burlington, North Carolina, listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Lori.
Hi, Dr. Mohler. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm glad to hear from you. What are you thinking about this?
Well, my 14-year-old actually is a wide receiver. He's played football for several years, and he has an extreme passion to become an NFL player. And as a Christian mom, as a believing mom, I encourage him to seek the Lord consistently in this passion. And I give him the advice that the Lord is sovereign, and if the Lord chooses for him to even pick up trash alongside of the road, he will glorify the Lord in it. And that is my encouragement to him. But I am concerned because I can see that some of his passion is encouraged by watching some of these NFL players who seek to share.
You know, Lori, what a great word from a mom. And I think we can all right now picture this. We have a 14-year-old boy who desperately wants to be in the NFL. And I'm going to ask Ted Kluck to respond to this when we come out of the break. But let me tell you, I don't think there's a thing wrong with that. That is not, you know, some kind of wrongful aim or expectation. And he's 14. But I think, you know, just as I'm hearing you talk and I hear the concern and the conviction in your voice, you're giving wonderful advice and guidance to your son. But I think, you know, broadening his understanding to know that his purpose, the purpose of which he was made, was not to do this or that, whether it's sports or business or politics or whatever, but rather to glorify God in every area of life. There is more to life than this. And the reality is the statistics speak for themselves. A tiny, tiny, minuscule fraction of those who want to play in the NFL ever do. But for those who don't, life isn't over. God has not only something else, but actually something better. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. I think a lot of people who might be reading this cover story in Christianity Today by Cheryl James Hoffman might not know one thing he references. He doesn't really go into this, but he does reference it, and that is that evangelicals used to be very suspicious of sports. And, of course, that's turned entirely around, where now you have churches that have big sports ministries. You have enormous parachurch sports ministries. And very high-profile evangelicals in sports. What he doesn't go into is the turning point in this, and a lot of people don't know. It was a movement called Muscular Christianity that emerged in the late 19th, early 20th centuries, whereby out of concern for reaching young men in particular and bringing out virtues that sports were felt to possess, there was an effort to use this idea of muscular Christianity to say, hey, Christianity is about strength rather than the wrong kind of weakness. It's about excellence rather than mediocrity. There were a lot of gains in that, but I'm afraid that the one thing I really agree with in this cover story is that a lot of evangelicals just embrace sport because it's sport, and it can become idolatrous, and they're never really even asking the question as to whether it's in the right place in their lives or in a wrong place. But my guess is that my guest Ted Kluck would say the same thing could be true of money, or the business or political worlds, or just about anything else. Ted Kluck is a journalist. Glad to have him here as a guest, friend of the Albert Mueller Program, author of the book The Reason for Sports, A Christian Manifesto. Ted, just before we went into the break, you heard Lori calling, talking about her 14-year-old son. Now, you've played professional ball. How would you respond to a mom talking with concern about a 14-year-old boy whose great goal in life right now is to play for the NFL?
First of all, such a great call. I really appreciate Lori for calling in and saying that. And as she was talking, it was like I was hearing my own mom's voice when I was a teenager, you know. And there was so much wisdom in what she was saying. And I think the fact that she's kind of challenging her son with this now is great. I really wish I'd learned that lesson when I was 14 and not in my early 20s when I ended up finally learning it, and as I keep learning it. I think it's a question of identity. You know, where are we finding our identity as people? You know, is it in the money we make? Is it in the accomplishments that we have? Is it in, you know, the attainment of this goal, which for him is the NFL? It was for me. It is for a lot of young athletes. You know, that's a dream. But are we day in and day out finding our hope and our peace and our identity in Christ? And I would just encourage Lori and other parents to, you know, not only pray for her, for their kids. I know she's doing that, but involve the kids in that process. You know, pray with your son before he competes. You know, pray with him before he practices, and share scripture with him that speaks to this idea of identity and our identity being found in Christ and his work.
Very
on the cross,
important.
You know, because it's so easy to lose sight of that.
Very, very important. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Seneca, South Carolina. Bobby's listening on the World Wide Web. Go ahead, Bobby.
Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say, you know, if we use, as sports fans, if we use sporting events as a sanctuary to escape our Christianity, it's wrong. But if we use those things as a witnessing tool and an ability to witness for Christ, I think there's nothing wrong with it.
Good point, Bobby. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Orlando. Bill's listening on WHIM. Go ahead, Bill.
Again, thanks, Dr. Mueller, for taking my call. I agree with, you know, even from my past experience, that sports can lead us into adultery. Replacing spending time with God, and many times people can't tell you what the Bible says, but they can name all the players on a professional football team or basketball team. And the last comment I'll make is, one of the things we found at even some of our services, where when we were having services during the Super Bowl game or during on that Sunday, it was almost like you almost had to cut the service God had to move at a certain time in order to make room for the Super Bowl, and that's wrong.
Bill, boy, I really appreciate your call, and I resonate with what you're saying here, especially when you talk about the matter of passion and priority, because the reality is I could list you a lot of guys I know who could recite to you sports statistics and rosters and all the rest because that's their passion. And, you know, I don't think that's a bad passion. The problem is it can never compete with an ultimate passion. There are greater things a man's called to. Certainly to the glory of God, being deployed for the kingdom of Christ is first and foremost. And that, of course, means as a faithful disciple, growing in grace, walking with the Lord, reading the scripture, being a student of God's word, growing in grace at every level. And then their responsibilities of family and home and children. I know of folks who are drawn out of their family by sports, and that's another problem because we'll be judged for that. Our responsibility as men is in marriage and family and home, and God's judgment will be on us if we sacrifice that for anything. And that could be career, that could be many other things, but sports seems to be a major temptation. Let's go to Kingsport, Tennessee. David's listening on the line. Go ahead, David.
Yes, sir. You mentioned earlier about the martial sports and the effect they had on the body and that being a detriment to the body. My concern also is many sports are actually attracting people who come for the violence, whether it's the car crash at the races or the fights at the hockey game. I mean, this kind of obsession with violence makes the sport itself inherently demeaning to the person, demeaning to God's glory, I think also.
Yeah, you know, David, I think that's a very good point. And by the way, I saw just the other day that there is, well, in fact, it's in this article, referenced at least, that there are folks who do nothing but watch videos of fights that break out at hockey games because of the old joke, you know, went to the hockey game and actually a game broke out because fighting is so much a part of it. And, you know, you can kind of understand what's going on there, but you can't celebrate it as a Christian, which requires some pretty thoughtful analysis, which is why I've got Ted Kluck on the program. Ted, when you think about something like hockey, how would you advise, say, you know, an 18-year-old kid who wants to play hockey, how would you advise that?
Yeah, I would say play it hard, play it to the best of your ability. You know, fighting is it's a unique part of the culture of that sport, and it's something that, yeah, as Christians, we need to examine that, you know, and we need to examine as fans, you know, what's our motivation for being there as players, you know, what's our motivation. I don't think for a Christian making a team as a fighter is the right motivation, you know, and that's sort of its own niche kind of job responsibility in hockey. But then again, I had a great interview once a few years back with a guy named Stu Grimson, who was kind of a notorious hockey goon, a fighter. And was a wonderful Christian guy. Had come to know the Lord and enjoyed some pretty rich relationships with some of those other guys that he had shared the ice with. So, you know, I think even in a context like that, the Lord can redeem the hearts of those guys.
Very interesting point. Ted Kluck is the author of the book you need to know about, The Reason for Sports, A Christian Manifesto. If you've been listening to this program, you know, he's a co-author of a book, Why We're Not Emergent, by two guys who ought to be. Ted, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right, this has been a good conversation, and when we come back, we'll wrap it up with some final thoughts. I appreciate the callers. I appreciate Ted Kluck. I appreciate the fact that you folks have helped me to think through and frame an issue. We'll be right back. Welcome back. A couple of final observations just to think about here. When it comes to sports, it can bring out the best or the worst. It can bring out the best in terms of nobility and valor of commitment and discipline, or it can bring out the worst in terms of everything from criminality and violence to carnality and materialism, greed, and all the rest. But, you know, even as I say that about sports, you could say that about so many other things as well. You could say it about politics. You could say it about business and commerce. You could say it about, just about anything, the world of publishing, for that matter, or the media. The difference is, I think, and this is what makes sports so powerful, is that for many people, and especially for men and boys, sport becomes a fascination because it's something they can do, something they can participate in, something they can identify with. And it becomes something that's not only an avocation for fun, it can be something that takes on a much larger significance in life as well. I think this cover story in Christianity Today is a good shot over the bow. Every once in a while, you know, the ship of our lives needs to be shaken up a little bit by being confronted by the right questions. And by the way, I want to be hard on this. I think there are many people for whom sports is an idolatry. I think there are many Christians who are unaware that they have indeed more or less translated their Christianity into what Frank DeFord, not a theologian after all, but a sports columnist, calls sportianity. I've seen the other side of it too, although I've no doubt seen where sport can bring out the nobility and also opportunities for a demonstration of Christian witness and a penetration of the world with the gospel. I mean, the fact is that in the structured world of sport, the very requirement of the sport, of the athletic endeavor, often calls forth virtues and values that are in themselves good and godly, and in many ways point us to our need for Christ. The discipline that sport at any adequate level of, say, professional or college level or even high school first team, the kind of discipline that's called for there is a discipline that can be well translated over into other and, shall we say, even more important areas of life, whether it be the worlds of work and culture, or even more importantly, the world of the church, discipleship, Christian witness. All this is good fodder for conversation. I'm glad Ted Kluck joined me today because I needed some help talking about the issue of sports. And even as I do so, I'm just admitting that I'm one of those that isn't so much tempted in this area as I might be in others to an idolatry of other lesser things. But when it comes to sport, it's a good thing to be reminded that idolatry is a danger. It's also good to be reminded that Christians are called, in whatever we do, to do all things to the glory of God. If we get that perspective, my guess is we're going to end up pretty much in the right place. And maybe at different points in our lives, sports has a different priority. Good stuff for conversation, which leads me to say I'm looking forward to tomorrow. It's Ask Anything Wednesday. You'll set the agenda for what we talk about. I'll meet you then. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.